May it please the court. My name is Jordan Levine and I represent Shelley Crow, the appellant in this matter. This case stems from an appeal from a workers' compensation proceeding where penalties were assessed against an insurer for its failure to order a medical review as required by the rules within 7 days from a request for prior authorization from an authorized treating physician. There are essentially two statutes that address penalty situations under the Workers' Compensation Act. There's the general provision, 843.304, which states that any, in this case, insurer who fails to perform an act can be punished by a fine by no more than $500 per day. That's now been increased under the new statute for $1,000 a day, but the provision is the same. 843.305 is titled Each Day Separate Offense. And that statute, in pertinent part, states that each day during which an insurer fails to comply with a lawful order, each day shall constitute a separate and distinct violation. So the central issue in this case is whether the ALJ has discretion to view an ongoing violation to perform a duty imposed by the Act as a single day violation, or does the language in 843.305 mandate that an ALJ view an ongoing violation of a failure to act as a violation that occurs each and every day until corrected? And it is the claimant's position that the mandatory language in 843.305 removes the ALJ's discretion as it pertains to the mandatory requirements once a penalty is found. That if there's an ongoing failure to perform a single day, a failure to perform an act, the judge has to award a penalty for each and every
time. Sorry to interrupt. Is it a legal review, a de novo review, or is it a factual question?
In this particular case, it is a legal review, and it's de novo.
The question of whether it occurs more than a single day or every day on an ongoing basis is factual, is it not?
We don't believe that it is. We believe that there are situations where there is an act that occurs on a single day, and there are acts that are continuing in nature, by its very nature. When an insurer has an obligation to do something, to act, and they don't do it, it occurs each and every day, because that duty to act is still there. But there are rules, let's say you can't talk to a dime physician, the case we cited in our brief, where you cannot talk to a dime physician. That rule applies every day, but the occurrence only occurs one time. But in this particular case, Ms. Crow had a right to a medical review within 7 days. That duty by the insurer did not go away. The ALJ is afforded discretion to determine whether or not a penalty occurred. Was there a violation of the act? And in this case, the ALJ determined that there was. The ALJ then has discretion to award a penalty up to $500 a day. So for severe penalties, it's $500. For penalties that aren't so severe, he can award anything he wants. But once he finds that there's a penalty situation, and it's something that occurs each and every day, we don't believe that there is discretion in that situation. 843.305 uses that mandatory language. The legislature put the word shall in there, which we believe removed the ALJ's discretion once he believed that a penalty has occurred.
After that first 7 days, he has to do this. Did it ever cure that? Once it goes through the first 7 days and fails, can it ever then cure it? I mean, on the 25th day, it still is not complying with the reg.
Right. That's what we believe, Your Honor. We believe that they can cure it, that the requirement is that it occurs within 7 days. But on day 8, they can perform or they can order the review. On day 9, on day 25, they can order the review. It's just like the payment of temporary total disability benefits. It's due within 14 days. But it's still due on that 15th day. It's still due on the 25th day. That's why we believe that there's a difference between those single-day violations, not showing up for an appointment, canceling a hearing, or talking to a dime doctor, or here where a benefit is due to somebody. Here the rules provided for a medical review, that when a primary treating physician orders pre-authorization for, in this case, it was a surgery, that the claimant has a right to get that reviewed by another doctor in the same specialty. And here, that, you know, the judge found that they violated that provision. He assessed the maximum award, but found that it only occurred on one day, and that's where we believe the error lies. And we believe that when you have statutes that address the same topic, as we do here, we have 304, 843, 304, and 843, 305, that you must read them together. If we accept the ALJ's reasoning and the ICAP's reasoning in this case, that the ALJ has afforded discretion, then there really wasn't any reasoning behind 843, 305. It would absolutely have no meaning. Because the 843, 304 already affords that discretion to say you can award a penalty every day that a violation occurs. Well, 843, 305 comes in and says, well, each day that it occurs, it's a separate and distinct violation. The response, or appellee, wants the court to focus on the phrase in 843, 305, during which. The statute reads, every day during which an insurer fails to perform an act. Not really sure what the distinction is there, because the words every day have to be given meaning, and then the word shall has to be given meaning. In this particular case, again, just like the award of, or the payment of temporary total disability benefits, this is the only other benefit that you get under the act. You get medical benefits. This is something that the claimant is entitled to every day. None of this, you know, simple issue. I feel that I could reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Steve Picardi, attorney registration number 21093, representing the respondents below, Denver West Marriott, New Hampshire Insurance Company. The issue in this case is the meaning of the term during which. The rules of statutory construction are very clear. In construing the statute, the courts must give effect to the underlying legislative intent. In this case, we have the luxury of knowing what the underlying legislative intent was of Section 843.305. As stated by the court in Spracklin versus ICAO, by declaring each day a separate offense, the General Assembly provided for the joinder of penalty claims for ongoing conduct after the date of the claim. That's Spracklin at 177. The issue then is, or the emphasis there is on ongoing conduct, because if there's no continuing duty for the respondents to act, then Section 843.305 does not apply. Now, the claimant argues that simply because the respondents had an obligation to admit or deny medical treatment within 7 days, every day that went by after that time is an additional penalty. That presupposes that the respondents had a continuing duty to obtain a medical review. That's not what the statute says, however. If you look at the purpose of, before I get there, again, the courts must give the words and phrases their commonly accepted and understood meaning, and if the statutory language is unambiguous, there's no need to resort to interpretive rules of statutory construction. Again, that's Spracklin at 177. In this case, Section 843.305 says every day during which the insurer is in violation or fails to perform a duty imposed by Articles 40 to 47 of the Act shall constitute a separate and distinct offense. The term here that is the applicable term here is during which. Not shall constitute a separate and distinct violation, because the Act doesn't say every day after a violation. The use of the term during which connotes, again, an ongoing duty on behalf of the respondent or the party alleged to be.
Party is an argument that during the first 7 days, there was a duty to act within the first 7 days, and that on the eighth day, there was no longer a duty to act, that basically you violated. After that, there was no longer a violation.
No, Your Honor. The situation would be different if the respondents had done nothing. They had a duty to admit for either medical reasons or non-medical reasons. That's what their duty was. It wasn't a duty to get a medical review. It was a duty to either, I'm sorry, I said admit. It was a duty to deny for either medical or non-medical reasons. Under the Workers' Compensation Rule Procedure 16-10, which is entitled Contest of a Request for Prior Authorization, there are only two bases for denying medical treatment, either medical or non-medical. The respondents, in this case, denied for non-medical reasons. The court found that there was actually a medical reason for denying and that they should have denied for medical reasons. But the point is that the duty is to either deny for medical or for non-medical. Once that decision has been made, once the denial has been made, the duty stops. The claimant argues that the claimant had a right to a medical review. Rule 16 does not exist for the claimant. Rule 16, Industrial Claim Appeals Office has numerous cases which interpret Rule 16-10, and that has held repeatedly that Rule 16-10 is to offer protection to an authorized treating physician from providing treatment that the insurer later challenges as non-compensable. The rule here is protecting the provider from going out and performing treatment, and then the respondents then say, oh, well, wait a second, you shouldn't have performed that because it's not compensable, we're not going to pay for it. So there was no continuing duty to the claimant to get a medical review. The duty was to either admit for medical or non-medical reasons. And once that duty, once the respondents chose to admit for non-medical reasons, that was the end of their duty.
So they can't later get medical review? They can't cure it, as opposing counsel suggested?
Well, they certainly could. And there are other reasons why they might want to do so. And my supplemental citation of authority, Your Honor, I've attached Rule 16F, which is not an issue in this particular case. But Rule 16F indicates that an unreasonable, I'm sorry, 16-10F, indicates that an administrative law judge may award penalties for an unreasonable denial of prior authorization, which means that even if the respondents comply with Rule 16-10 in denying for either medical or non-medical reasons, the court, the administrative law judge, still can grant penalties if it's unreasonable. So in that circumstance, Your Honor, certainly the respondents may decide to go out and get a medical determination after they've complied with either 16A, 16-10A or 16-10B, but that's not relevant to what their actual duty was at the time they denied. Now, you would ask, Judge, whether this is a factual a question or not. And the answer is yes, it's absolutely a factual question, because the application of a rule of law stating that there's a continuing duty to deny or to obtain a medical review after the initial denial is not a workable situation, especially under the facts of this case. In this case, the administrative law judge specifically found in the order, paragraph 5, that the respondents had written a letter notifying the treating physician that they were denying medical treatment for non-medical reasons. And the judge also stated that the respondent said, if you believe that the surgery is not purely cosmetic in nature, please feel free to provide the medical basis for your position. And the judge found Dr. Snyder did not reply to that letter. The problem in this circumstance, Your Honors, is that the respondents wrote to Dr. Snyder and said, if you think we're wrong, if you think this is not purely cosmetic in nature, such that we should have a medical review, let us know. And the doctor never responded to that letter. That's why it is a factual determination, and that's why discretion for the administrative law judge, it's necessary for the administrative law judge to have discretion to determine whether it's a continuing penalty or a one-day penalty. Because in this case, if Dr. Snyder had written back and said, this is not purely cosmetic in nature, and these are the reasons it's not purely cosmetic in nature, the judge may have said, respondents, you were put on notice that Dr. Snyder didn't think it was purely cosmetic in nature, therefore you should have gotten a medical review.
It seems to me that begs the question. I mean, it seems that the ALJ decided it was a medical reason. And it seems that by saying it is strictly cosmetic, one is saying there is no medical reason for this. This is an optional cosmetic surgery. So implicit is this is not medical. To shift the burden over to the doctor to say otherwise this seems just contrary to what the whole case is about. To the extent that if I were to view this in this fashion and conclude that they had a duty at the time then to have said this is a medical reason, what would their duties have been on that date?
I'm not sure I'm following the question.
If they had said what the ALJ said they should have said, that is, for a medical reason, we are denying because we believe it is not medically required. That's a medical reason.
Well, in this case, Your Honor, that's what the respondent says, that it's a cosmetic-only procedure, and therefore it's not a covered benefit under the Workers' Compensation Act. The judge said that the determination that it was a cosmetic procedure only was not a non-medical reason to deny. It was a medical reason. So the judge said that's where the penalty lied, not in failing to get a medical review, but in denying for medical reasons, non-medical reasons, when they should have denied for medical reasons.
So had they denied for medical reasons, then they would have been required within 7 days to get a medical review.
Correct. Correct. They would have been required if they had denied for medical reasons to get a medical review. But the question becomes, that it is under the facts of this case, and again, this is why the administrative law judge and why the Industrial Criminal Appeals Office has repeatedly held that the administrative law judge has discretion to determine whether it's a continuing duty or a one-day failure to act. In this case, respondents had written to the doctor and said, if you think we're wrong here, let us know. And the doctor never responded. I'm not arguing, Your Honor, that we're shifting the burden to the doctor to tell us whether it's medical or non-medical. What I'm saying, though, is that under the facts of this case, the administrative law judge considered the fact that the respondents were aware of the fact that it may not be purely cosmetic in nature. And they didn't take any action based upon the fact that the doctor never disavowed them of their understanding.
But that's a question of law, isn't it? I mean, it's purely cosmetic.
You're saying there's no medical need for it.
Okay. Not a question of Dr. Woodcup. It's not purely cosmetic.
Correct. And we're not challenging the administrative law judge's finding that it was medical as it was actually a medical determination. What we're arguing, though, Your Honor, I'm only eliciting this point in order to just show why it's so important for the administrative law judge to have discretion in determining whether it's a continuing failure to act or a one-day failure to act.
Any game playing, though, on behalf of the provider to say, we're going to call this non-medical, and unless somebody tells us otherwise,
make somebody tell us otherwise, see if we can get away with it.
No, Your Honor, because of Rule 16-10F. Because 16-10F says you proceed at your own peril if you want to do that. Because the judge can still award penalties for an unreasonable denial. That's the protection that we have there. And that's why discretion is necessary. And this court defers to this court gives deference to the panel's interpretation of workers' compensation statutes and will set that interpretation aside only if it's inconsistent with the clear language of the statute or the legislative intent. Well, we know it's not inconsistent. ICAP has repeatedly held that the administrative law judge should have discretion in determining whether it's a continuing failure to act or a one-time failure to act.
We know that that determination, or ICAP's interpretation, is consistent with the legislative declaration or the legislative intent, because this court's already decided the legislative intent in Spracklin, which is to determine ongoing failures to comply with the statute. The penalty decision is also consistent with the court's interpretation of the penalty statutes. In Giddings versus ICAO, the court was faced with interpreting whether the court had whether the administrative law judge could grant penalties under the general provisions of 843.304.1, or was bound by the specific provisions of an 8% penalty for failure to pay benefits, medical benefits, within 30 days. And the court held that when a penalty for failure to pay medical benefits is premised on an order, the ALJ may, in his or her discretion, order penalties based on either Section 843.304.1, which is a general penalty statute, or 843.401.2, which is the specific provision of 8% for failure to pay. So this court has already held that the ALJ has to have discretion in determining the amount of penalties and what penalty statute to penalize someone under. The ICAP's interpretation is consistent with that holding, and is also consistent with the legislative intent and also the application under the workers' compensation, the application of the facts in this case. Thank you.
I'm glad I saved so much time, because it appears that counsel is re-arguing the facts. 16-10F says, unreasonable delay or denial of prior authorization, as determined by director or an administrative law judge, as we have here, may subject the payer to penalties under the Workers' Compensation Act. The penalties under the Workers' Compensation Act are contained in two statutes. One, 843.304, which is the general provision. And if we're concerned about discretion, it lies right there. The ALJ has several levels of discretion under this general provision. Number one, the judge has to decide whether or not a penalty has occurred at all. And in this case, the judge did, and I'm going to read that part of the order in a moment, because the judge did rule that this was an unreasonable denial. Number two, once he finds that a penalty is appropriate, the ALJ then can set the amount. The judge could have controlled that $500 if that's what he really wanted by setting the amount at, let's say, $10 or $50 or whatever it may be. The judge could have controlled that. The judge decided, however, that this was up to the maximum at the time, which is $500 a day. The judge felt that the denial was unreasonable, and that's why the insurer was punished. These statutes are not only to protect the doctor, because the doctor, if the doctor doesn't get prior authorization, he sees another patient that day. There's somebody else waiting to get a surgery. And that's why they put some teeth behind these penalties, because insurers need to be pushed to do the right thing sometimes. Somebody was given the prescription to say, you know what, I can help your situation. I know you're in pain. This surgery will help you. It then triggered some responsibilities on behalf of the carrier, and they're very simple responsibilities. All they had to do was submit the documentation to another provider. And another provider could have said, yes, it will help her, or it is only cosmetic, or it's not cosmetic, or no, it won't help her. And then we would have gone to hearing. The claimant had a right to this review, somebody else taking a look at it, not the adjuster just deciding on her own whether or not it was medically reasonable or necessary, because the only call at the time was from the authorized treating physician who said that it was. Now, when we talk about reasonableness, the ALJ in this case found that whether the surgery is purely cosmetic is a medical determination. The denial was not based on a non-medical reason, it was based on a medical reason. Insurer was required under Rule 1610B to have the submitted documentation reviewed by a physician. That's what the penalty is for. It said it did not do so. Insurer violated 1610B. It further found and concluded that the insurer's failure to submit the documentation to a physician was not predicated on a rational argument based in law or fact. That's the definition of unreasonable. So the judge did find unreasonable in this case.
Also, the respondents have failed to show any mitigating circumstances. Counsel came up here and started arguing the facts again and said that, well, we sent the letter to the doctor, we did good. The judge already considered that and rejected it. This is solely the issue of whether or not the judge has discretion once he determines that there's a violation of the act or that the insurer did not follow the rules, whether or not at that point the judge can then utilize more discretion to say, well, you know, that only occurred on one day. If that's the case, then there are no scenarios where there are ongoing penalties, because you can do something on a certain day when you're prohibited from doing so and not do it the next day and it's cured. In this particular case, the right to review was available to the claimant each and every day. That was a right she had not only on the seventh day, but like you said, Judge, on the 25th day, the 80th day, before hearing, getting letters from counsel. They had many opportunities, and they did not mitigate what they were doing wrong at the time. And
that's let me see if I can get this straight. The ALJ found that the employer denied the pre-authorization because of a medical reason. That's the focus, right?
Well, that triggers that.
That triggers the duty, but the focus of the, if I understand it right, the focus turns on what did the employer determine, medical or non-medical, and what did the ALJ find that would trigger the duty. Does that make any sense?
I understand what you're asking or what you're saying.
It's a question.
What you're asking, under that, if it is a non-medical reason, and the Rule 16 addresses that, if it's for a non-medical reason, there is no duty.
Right.
Right. So in this case, the judge was saying that whether or not it's purely cosmetic does not fall in that exception to deny for non-medical reasons, that even that determination, while it was purely cosmetic, was a medical determination.
So the
duty then to have the review was triggered. And because they didn't do that, because they didn't have the review, they were penalized.
The duty was triggered, as I understand the finding, the duty was to get the medical review was triggered upon the ALJ saying, no, this was for a medical reason. So that's why the ALJ said this is a one-time duty.
I think what triggered the duty is not the judge's determination. I think what triggered the duty was when the authorized treating physician.
I'm not saying what triggered the duty necessarily. I'm trying to figure out the exercise of discretion and or question of fact comes about. You're saying no fact, but it seems to me the basis of what the ALJ did was to find that there was a medical reason, and therefore that triggered the duty.
I think what the judge was saying was looking back, what the carrier did was make the wrong call.
Right.
And so when the carrier took that position that it was cosmetic and it was for a non-medical reason, they were taking a chance by trying to put this situation under a different rule. The judge, what I believe was saying was, no, it doesn't fit there. You know, it's not a non-medical reason, and therefore you don't have to do the review. That is a medical reason, and that falls under 16-9. And therefore, the medical review was required. Not that it was we didn't go to court to determine whether or not it was cosmetic or non-cosmetic. It was a decision made a long time before the application was even filed. And I think that's why that determination is key, just because the carrier at the time, and that's what this rule is trying to prevent, is from the carrier making those calls. Because if it's not compensable at all, they don't have to do the review. Here we have a compensable claim. It's an open claim. You have a request from an authorized treating provider for a surgery, needed prior authorization. Therefore, the duty to have that reviewed was triggered. And when they decided not to, the judge found that was unreasonable. And that's why the judge found that a penalty was, was warranted. We just believe that under that situation, that's what 843.305 is for. It takes when he's utilized his discretion and then makes it mandatory to make it apply to each and every day. We therefore ask that you reverse the ALJ's decision only as it pertains to
the length of the penalty because there's been no appeal as to the amount. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. This case is submitted. We will issue our opinion in due course. That